Get ready. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace, your host for another episode. Paul is out again this week. He's tired. He's not feeling very well. And honestly, I am right there with him. It has been a rough day. But we are here, me and this unnamed person who will continue to be unnamed until I see fit. If you're joining us for the first time, this is the show where we get to know the gaming news of the week and we get to know our guest. It is episode 143 of the Weekly Cooldown. It is January 21st. Our main story this week is our only main story. You probably already know what it is because you read the title or you haven't been under a rock for a week. It is Microsoft's almost acquisition of Activision Blizzard. We will be discussing that and a lot of different ideas surrounding that acquisition. But first, we've got headlines. So, without further ado, here we go. Cuphead is set to get a new Netflix animated series this February. Netflix announced today, alongside a brand new trailer, that the show will follow Cuphead and his brother Mugman in some animated hijinks. For those that need a reminder, the Cuphead game was released in 2017 and was based on the animation of the 1930s and 40s. The animation of the game, coupled with the playstyle and difficulty, made it one of the fastest-selling games of its time, with 1 million copies sold in the first 2 weeks of release and reaching up to 5 million copies by September 2019. No doubt Netflix is trying to capture a little of that magic with this series, and you can watch the Cuphead series on Netflix on February 18th, 2022. Phil Spencer, who we will be talking about a lot later in this episode, said that Sony's alleged Game Pass equivalent is actually a great idea. A Bloomberg report in December claimed that Sony is working on its own version of Game Pass, which would combine PlayStation Plus and PlayStation Now. That service will launch in the spring of 2022, allegedly. Phil Spencer said in an interview with IGN that he believes that others doing things like Games Pass or coming to PC is, quote, the right answer. Phil Spencer said in the same interview that allowing customers to play the games they want, where they want to play them, and giving them a choice on how to build their library is a good thing. He went on to say that companies like Microsoft and Sony should continue to innovate and compete against each other. Baseball may be difficult for people to explain, but it no doubt has gathered a massive gathering of players to come and play the simulated online baseball league, with seemingly random and otherwise out of place yet also somehow completely fitting elements. The upcoming Blazeball trading card game will hopefully make things easier to wrap our heads around. Blazeball, the card game, was announced this week and is currently being described as a competitive game for two players. It is being developed by the original Blazeball developers, the Game Band, and the board game company Wayfinder Games. While we do not have much detail about what the game will look like or where to or when to get cards, the Game Band clarified on Twitter that they will continue to support fans who wish to make their own original fan works for this iteration of Blazeball, and even went so far as to confirm, quote, if it's yours and original, feel free to sell it. The Game Band will be launching a crowdfunding campaign in the near future and have confirmed that NFTs are not in the cards for this game. This year's Awesome Games Done Quick raised nearly $3.5 million this year for the Prevent Cancer organization, who is dedicated to the prevention and early detection of cancer. The official amount, according to the Games Done Quick Twitter, is $3,416,729. The highest amount raised for AGDQ so far, beating its previous record by $28 million. Roughly 50,000 individuals donated this year, which is especially impressive given that these shows are now online only due to the pandemic. This year also saw some other interesting highlights, including a complete 2-hour and 35-second run of Sekiro Shadows Die Twice with a blindfold on, and a new Deltarune speedrunning tactic known as the Lesbian Skip, which skips an integral scene in the story where two characters, Susie and Noelle, essentially go on a date with each other. The speedrunner who discussed the lesbian skip, Shay, or Shay TV, said during his run,
So unlike the main route, lesbian skip is actually mandatory here. We can't ever watch what they do. The game doesn't give us an option to, so that's how you know this route is absolutely pure evil.
Those are all of the headlines for this week. Again, if you have anything you want to chat about, or if I missed any headlines, there were some really good ones or something like that, and you really need to talk about it, please come find me on Twitter at CommieJaceGaming or at WKCooldown. DMs is open. Come talk. You know I love to talk. So, if you remember last week, we had a guy on. His name. What was his name? Do you remember his name, guest?
This is last week's episode?
Mm-hmm.
Yes! Oh my gosh, you had one of my favorite guests of all time on last week.
Yeah, who's that?
Yes, you had Walt Braley, the internet humorous and de facto video game genius.
Video game genius?
Oh boy.
Whoa. Them's some big words there, buddy. No, I'm kidding. Welcome back, Walt.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been too long.
It has. A whole week. Way too long.
I mean, I always said it was my dream to be on episode 143 of this show, and just making it happen means everything to me.
It was your dream to be on 142 and 143.
Sorry, let me rephrase. Last week last week was a goal. This week was the dream.
I see.
Yeah.
I understand.
Okay, but for real, so we all know that when you do the headlines each week, you just make up a couple for fun. Nobody actually beat Sekiro blindfolded, right?
Oh no, that happened.
I'm upset.
That happened. Someone put on one of those, like, you know, those like sleep masks, right?
Yes.
Really black out the light so you can't see a damn thing. And 2 hours and 35 seconds.
I had to quit Sekiro because I couldn't kill a horse.
Yeah, guess what? I didn't play that game after, like, I don't know, many years of being upset that I could not beat the first boss. And then I beat the first boss and was like, man, I can do anything. And then I lost to, like, I don't know, a shadow that looked at me funny or something.
Right. I'm like a Dark Souls person and still was like, yeah, this is not for me on Sekiro.
I want so bad to be one of the people who has either the patience to, like, get through those games, or the skill to, like, oh man, this isn't so bad.
If I successfully hit one parry in Sekiro, it would be on my resume.
Yeah, and it takes all of my brain power to, like, focus on a parry, and then they're like, hey, do you want other people to fight? And I'm like, no, not really. One's enough.
Wow, that is remarkable.
It's a difficult game, and I, like, commend people. First of all, I commend people who really like it and can do it, you know, can play it well and know what they're doing. But I condemn the people who look me in the face and are like, it's not hard. Yes, it is.
Yes. Yeah, I can't stand. Yeah. If someone tells me, yeah, you can just grind or cheese your way through Dark Souls, I'm like, maybe. But if you were like, oh, Sekiro, it's actually pretty simple once you get the hang of it, I'd be like, no, it's not.
And yeah, you're a demon person.
Yeah, and you hate me specifically.
I wish I could be also one of the people. I kind of, like, have a love-hate for speedrunning. I think, like, mm-hmm. I'm one of those people, I'm like a video game apologist or something, who, like, play the game the way it's supposed to be played. Like, don't speed run through it. That's wrong. But then at the same time, I'm like, I really do like watching other people try to finish the game as quickly as possible.
It's satisfying to watch because it's like, I don't know if this is even a term, but it's usually so pixel perfect with like every single move that like there's something, it's very satisfying to watch. I also have a love hate. Last week, your guest mentioned Spelunky, a game that is very hard just to get through, but people will speed run the whole thing. I have every achievement in Spelunky 1, every single one, except for beating the whole game in 8 minutes.
Wow.
And I started speedrunning to like be like, okay, if I've got all the others, I can get this. And it took like a week before I was like, actually, I don't have to have every achievement. Like, there was just like no scenario where I saw, I don't know if there's just like a skill plateau or like a ceiling you have to burst through, but I get frustrated that the people that are that good, I can't even practice to get there. Yeah, it's just so hard.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not even like, you know, a competition in the way that most competitions feel, right? Like, I don't feel offended that these people are better than me. I just want so much to be at least a little bit on their level. And I know that I just don't either have the personality for it, or I just don't have the, like,
yes,
strange dedication that they have to it.
Yes, I don't want to beat them as much as I want to understand how their eyes can do it, how their hands can do it, what it even feels like if their brain completely clears for the moment when they're speedrunning.
I've seen people speedrun Resident Evil, a game that I don't think should be speedrun.
No, a single-player narrative game.
Yes. A game that I do not think should be speedrun in like 25 minutes. I'm like, I don't even know how you could do that. I watch everything happen. I shoot every zombie. What are you doing that I'm not doing?
I'm kind of a Sonic the Hedgehog guy. Movie first, game second. And I play that game. I like, the second I get going fast, I hit everything in my path and die. So I play that game out of like, I basically like get a nice jog going and just kill every row. And that's the game where you have to go fast.
Yeah,
like, he's got to go fast, and I'm like, okay, this one, Sonic, we're gonna take it easy.
You're actually playing the game wrong.
I know. I play Sonic like it's just a normal calm platformer. And every couple minutes, they're like, okay, you have to do a loop, guy. We have to push you.
I will say that it is quite the antithesis that Sonic is like some chill dude bro, but he also runs really fast. It's not the same thing. That's two different personalities, actually.
No. I don't think I would enjoy hanging out with any of the Sonic in real life, and that's pretty slanderous from me, especially. But I just, if I was around these guys in real life, I'd be like, "All right, Tails and Knuckles, you're okay. Everybody else, I gotta go."
Yeah, we gotta leave.
Yeah.
And then Knuckles would be like, "Okay, well, I'm going home alone, so bye."
Yeah, Knuckles. Yeah,
I'd be stuck with Tails.
I'd be like, "Okay, Knuckles, you're the only one here I like," and he'd be like, "That's too bad because I don't like you," and I like, I'm too cool for the others, but not cool enough for Knuckles.
And Tails is just like, "Oh, you want to go for a ride in the in the plane?"
Tails is like, "I built a plane that kind of works."
We may crash, but it's not my fault. Usually, there's a blue guy on the tail or on the wings,
and that helps.
I guess. Perfect. Well, we've done our banter. We're going to take a quick break.
Check.
And we will be right back with more show.
We interrupt this program to inform you about the new radio drama, officially sanctioned by the Immortal Emperor himself, Ghosts on a Train. Ghosts on a Train is all about the pride of Duskwall and the courageous but eccentric line bulls that keep our railways safe. Let's hear from the bulls now. Andrew Anderson, badge named Dunville.
The best thing about being a Lime Bull is definitely the train. Back at the orphanage, I shared my room with 20 people, and now I only share it with 3. Ooh, plus the food's way better. Plus there's a hot tub, and I swear that someday...
Yeah, we only have so much time. Adric, a.k.a. Drix. Badge name Colburn.
Close calls, huh? That was a wild one, but, you know what cowboy never rodeos entails.
Oh, that's unhelpful. Pippin Pip McKeel. Badge name McKeel.
Well, I think it's best about the train is the unintelligible mumblings of a drunken.
Ah, well, listen to Ghosts on a Train, the Ghost Lines actual play, releasing every other Thursday on a podcatcher near you.
Passengers, remain calm and please stay in your seats. We are experiencing pirate activity.
Oh, there's just something happening. What?
Them. Them.
Oh, no.
At the outer edges of space, where union is but a whisper, humanity scrapes together a living amongst the stars. This is the story of 4 Lancers, talented pilots of mechanized chassis from all corners of the known universe, thrown together by circumstance and destiny. And credits. Follow Matcha, Moxie, Roadkill, and Silver, led by me, Reed, your game master, through the Lancer system, a mud and laser style anime mecha RPG. I hope they brought some printers with them, because this is Bring Your Own Mech, an actual play Lancer podcast, and batteries are not included. Follow my heading, and I'll see you there.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the show. So, it's time to get into the news. The only news that really matters at this point. Being completely overshadowed by the lawsuit brought by Ninja and his wife to Pokimane, the streamers. Streamer drama is, like, utterly boring to me, but also somehow fascinating. But we can't talk about it because Phil Spencer decided that he was gonna drop a whole lot of cash over at Activision Blizzard. So, without further ado, let's get started. By now, of course, you do know that Microsoft has decided to buy Activision Blizzard for nearly $70 billion, with a B, dollars. And there are new details almost every minute about why the deal is happening, who is coming out on top, and what Sony will have to do in response to keep up with the so-called console wars. And we're going to dive into most of that in a moment. But for this particular story, what I wanted to do, because there is so much happening, is focus on a few main points. The first being, what could this mean for gamers? You guys, me, Walt here. Second, what could this mean for the workers and developers? Technically, Paul, who is works for Blizzard. And lastly, what could this mean for the industry as a whole? So let's get started. Just by kind of diving right in, right? So, the gamers, right? Us. We know Activision Blizzard has been mired in kind of scandal for, not kind of scandal, actual scandal, for the better part of 2020. Tons and tons of allegations, sexual harassment, and otherwise, which has kind of forced players to rethink where they're spending their time and money. And energy. I mean, sure, you're playing a game, but you are still expending some energy doing so. So, a lot of people left World of Warcraft. Some of them left it for Final Fantasy XIV. And a lot of players left other games, Overwatch, and found different places to be. This was a really great time for people to release their arena shooters and their multiplayer shooters. So we got a lot of people in Halo Infinite. People were trying to get into Battlefield, but failing because Battlefield has glitches. But anyway, what does it mean for the gamers going forward, right? So we have Microsoft acquiring Blizzard. First thoughts, Walt.
Yeah, so the first, I feel like it's, I mean, there's similarity here to the Bethesda deal in the sense that the everyone's gut reaction is, what would that be? Exclusivity, I guess. Like, I remember when Bethesda happened, everyone was like, oh, cool, so Skyrim's just on Xbox now.
Right.
But this one, it seems that that would have been my biggest thing to talk about is like, okay, does this mean games are more that the console war changes? But seems like already today that that's not the case.
Yeah.
It seems that, I mean, I know they said Call of Duty will stay on PlayStation. So it seems that they're more interested in making money than they are, like, destroying competition or anything right. like that. Or, like, winning the technology. Like, I don't know. It's, which is weird to me because I feel like the Xbox Series X has not been received as well as the PlayStation 5. So it's weird to think that they're like, oh, we don't care. We're not in it to beat them. We're in it just to make the money off of them, I guess. I don't know.
It is kind of weird because with Bethesda, you are seeing some exclusivity with Xbox, particularly with their space IP, Starfield. Starfield, developed by Bethesda Studios, is going to be apparently exclusive only for Xbox Series X and PC. November 11th, 2022, so this year, later this year. We don't quite know if that extends to The Elder Scrolls 6, which is still not quite out yet, right? We don't really know much about it.
There's no way. I don't know. Maybe I'll have egg on my face, but it just seems too big.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
It just seems like a gate, like it's not, I don't know. It's weird that the days of like the old like exclusive stuff, it's like there's a few remnants left, and I feel like Naughty Dog is the big one for PlayStation, and then like I guess Halo is the big one for, but the games like Elder Scrolls, I don't see those now retroactively becoming big flagship things. Call of Duty, no way. It's just not going to happen.
Right. Well, I guess I have to... I don't know. There's like this, like, will they, won't they with Bethesda, right? It seems less so with Call of Duty and the other IPs under Activision Blizzard, at least right now. But they are honoring a 3-year contract, I think they have with those games, allowing them to be, you know, disseminated elsewhere. So, you know, Sony has it and stuff like that. But what happens in 2025 when those 3 years are up, you know, does Phil say, well, you've had your 80 Call of Duty games up until now, so the next one, number 81, is ours and only ours.
Or maybe there's a scenario where they say, yeah, Call of Duty Modern Tank Blast 8 is on is on both systems, but we have this new cool one called Call of Duty Sleeper Cells, and it's only on the Xbox. And this is the one where you can hold a knife in each hand or whatever. You know, like a Black Ops, like a Black Ops or a Ghost type of thing.
That's definitely possible. We have seen, you know, especially in the past, we've seen companies, you know, disseminate their games to every console, but then have these spin-offs or these main games be only on the exclusive console, right? The PlayStation or the Xbox or the Dreamcast. No, Dreamcast didn't have it. Well, I guess it did. It had a lot of exclusives now I think about it. But anyway,
I feel sick that the point I immediately came up with is, I don't know, what if it just means more Call of Duty games? I'm like, oh no, why is that where I went?
What if we get three every year instead of just one? Yeah, could you imagine? One.
Finally, my prayers, they're answered. I don't know. Other than that, as a gamer, the other take I feel like I saw a little bit of, and I think this is a minority take. I think people are mostly smart to know not to jump on this take, but a lot of just tweets right out the gate were like, Game Pass becoming unstoppable in 2 years. And I think the bigger take above that is like, Monopoly unstoppable right now.
Yeah, right. But that's actually true, yes.
So it's like trying not to, because like I genuinely, like, I tout Game Pass. I use Game Pass. It changed video games for me because, it changed it from me playing one $20 probably multiplayer game all year to playing, like, four or five single-player bigger games.
Yep.
Like, a year for me. And so I know that, like, I'm a big fan of Game Pass. It deserves the hype it's been getting lately. But I also don't want Microsoft to own the world so that I can play Skyrim 5 on day one. And I'm butchering titles tonight. I'm not that dumb. I know it's Elder Scrolls 5. I know it's
Skyrim 5.
Yeah, I know.
I like Skyrim 5 a little bit better.
Yeah, my Call of Duty presents Skyrim 5.
Skyrim V.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm coming off like a dad that had a PlayStation 2.
Are you winning, son?
Yeah. I'm gonna punch my desk and be like, "What's gonna happen to Jack and Daxter?"
That would actually be. I would actually like to see. Well, Naughty Dog is still owned by Sony.
Yeah. So who makes Sly Cooper? Sly Cooper on the Xbox, not in my house.
Yeah. Right.
Like what?
I would love to see. Just as like a dream now, right? Because Microsoft is like, we're gonna do games again, not just your World of Warcraft and your Diablo and your Call of Duty and your Overwatch. We're gonna do games again. That seems to be Phil Spencer's whole thing, as opposed to Bobby Kotick's thing, who was like, how can I do monies? So I would love to see like a Crash Bandicoot Spyro crossover event of the century or something like that.
Do you remember when they did that?
They did have one, right?
Yeah, they switched the villains for one game each.
Yes, and they need to bring it back.
Yes.
You hear that, Phil?
I'm all in for more Crash. The newest Crash is very good. Could we see... I don't think this is like an original take. I think this is a take that gets thrown out once a year, and I'm just choosing to do it now. This is my one for the year. Are we going to get the Microsoft version of a Smash Brothers?
I was thinking that myself because they have so much iconic like weight now that they could do it. You know, World of Warcraft characters, Overwatch characters, Crash Bandicoot and Spyro. Throw in like Ghost from Call of Duty.
Okay, this took a turn. I know that makes sense, but yeah, like Master Chief goes in there, but also, and I guess I can't, like, that's the same thing as Snake being in Smash, but like, it's so funny to be like, uh-oh, the rude Bandicoot is being mowed down by Master Chief.
Yeah,
like,
no. oh no, it's Tracer versus Doom Guy?
I mean, hey, they should somehow make it an arena shooter or something. I don't know, just something to... Because Sony did an All-Stars game.
Yeah,
and
they tried.
I'd love to see Microsoft be like, no, all your fans, all your favorites are here.
Yeah.
But this game plays completely different, and it also, it kind of sucks, but we're all going to love it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
I saw someone point out that Microsoft basically owns all the crafts now. Warcraft, StarCraft, and Minecraft.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I forgot about them buying... Is that Mojang?
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Studios. Man, wow.
Which was actually a good move because the guy who started Mojang, real Nazi vibes.
Oh, no. Like,
massive Nazi vibes.
I hate when the guy that makes the biggest video game of all time has Nazi vibes. It just,
yep.
Just sucks.
Isn't it weird? Five Nights at Freddy's? Anyway.
So what... I should ask before I just wonder more. What do you think? What do you think is like the game, the big, like, as a player of these games, what do you expect, worry about, hope for?
I kind of hope that, like I said, I think the approach to games is different between Bobby Kotick and Phil Spencer, and a lot of other people have said this, where Phil Spencer seems to really want people to enjoy the games while also having good business sense to, you know, do things like Games Pass. The story we spoke about last week where he was like, I want to be able to ban people across all platforms, like, if you're being bothered by some asshole. He really wants people to enjoy the games, it seems like. He really wants to push the industry forward. He really wants to do things like that. Whereas Bobby Kotick seems content to just kind of be a fat cat, you know what I mean? Get money. Not even, you know, I don't know what his donation history is like, but it doesn't seem like he donates his money very often. He doesn't seem very philanthropic. Mm-hmm. He just kind of seems like he's sitting on whatever dollar bills come his way, and that's that. And never mind the hiring of Bush era and Trump era peoples to his team that seemed really sketchy and made me not want to play any of the games I once enjoyed. But also, like, he just doesn't seem invested in games. He seems invested in himself and the company, which is, like, fine if you're a businessman, but also, like, not super great if you're, like, business is entertainment, right? You still want people to buy into what you're doing, and having them just to sit on the, I guess, notoriety of it is not enough for me. So I'm hopeful that now that Microsoft is here, taking control in a way, like, we see some better games.
I think you...
Overwatch 2, except...
Oh, I'm convinced Overwatch 2 is the new Half-Life 3. I'm worried about that one.
Really?
I don't know. It just feels like a game that will either come out too quickly and people will be mad, or come out too late and people will be mad. I think you have made me... You've touched on something that I think is maybe where I keep getting stuck, which is after last week... I was kind of like, you know, Phil Spencer seems pretty cool, seems all right. And, like, then this happens. If you see the headline, you know, Microsoft spends $70 billion to acquire Activision Blizzard, it's like, oh, bad. That's not good.
Yeah.
But then you think, like, oh, Phil Spencer, hopefully a pretty okay person, and then much better than Kotick, and, like, almost assuredly.
Yeah.
So then you have, like, the tough thing of, like, okay, Microsoft owning everything, bad. But Phil Spencer having a say in some of these other things could be really good. And it's
very bittersweet.
Yes.
It's intensely bittersweet because you want to believe, most of the time at least, that especially people working on your video games have the gamer's intentions at heart, the best intentions at heart. But at the end of the day, you also have to remember, like, that man's richer than me, so why do I care? Like, I have this thing I say all the time, like, I really do not care about people who have more money than me, because I can't imagine that they have my best interest at heart. They want to keep their money, they want more of it, and this is really no different, right? $70 billion seems like a lot to us, but it's probably like a drop in the war chest bucket for Microsoft.
I actually think, I mean, again, I as we've covered, I'm famously an idiot, but I think that's a lot. The only margin I have for that is, let's see, shoot, I don't want to get it wrong. I did write it down. So Disney bought Star Wars for $4 billion.
Hmm.
And if you'd asked me, you know, a decade ago, what's the big, I'd have been like, Star Wars, it's the biggest, it's so big. And then like, and maybe I wouldn't have said that 10 years ago, but like, if Star Wars is worth $4 billion, I'm like, oh my God, 70 for Activision Blizzard. That
yeah.
makes my brain hurt quite a bit.
Yeah, if you think about it, Disney also bought Marvel for $4 billion, right? Marvel
was that also four?
Yeah.
Wow. That one at the time, I remember being like, oh, this is a weird choice. And then they that was like it makes sense as an investment to like buy it and turn it into something insane, which they, yeah, but
it's very possible that this could happen with the nearly 30 studios that Microsoft now owns.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
They could take their, you know, investments of clearly over $100 billion by now and turn it into, you know, that times 10.
On the smallest ground level, just out of personal interest, do you think this affects the video game I played in middle school, World of Warcraft? Do you think that World of Warcraft is that they think, okay, we can still, this can still be a flagship of the RPG world. We can get this onto Xbox, or we can, I don't know.
Yes and no. my cars. Hold on. Okay. My feelings about Warcraft are kind of threefold. I never got into it either as a kid or as an adult, so I don't quite understand everyone's fascination with it. But what spoke loudest to me about where they were and how fast they were going somewhere else was like back in, I don't know, I want to say 2015, 2016, they announced that they were finally like upscaling the graphics of the game. And I was like, now?
Yeah. Like,
you could have been doing that forever.
You could have just told me that it still looks the same as it did in 2004, or you could have just told me that, like, just like Final Fantasy, the whole game was closed and re-upped as a new game. Either way, I would have believed you. I don't. Right. I have just not been keyed into World of Warcraft at all.
Right. And then it kind of hit me strange that it still didn't look, and I'm sorry to say this, not that great.
Right.
So I was like, they're not really doing much over there. And then the like kind of, I don't want to say nail in the coffin, so to, but in that vein, the final push for me was that when Shadowbringers for Final Fantasy XIV was coming out, they introduced Shadowlands.
Yikes.
And there were people saying, no, it's totally original, blah, blah, blah. But then there were other people like, okay, so here's all the similarities. And it totally just like solidified in my mind, like nobody on that dev team cares enough to really put their heart and soul in it.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, because I was like sitting here like,
yes,
not knowing why it still is relevant. And not to say it shouldn't be, I don't know, but like wondering, right. I mean, some MMOs, you know, just like people still play Guild Wars, I think. Like,
yes.
The ones
Guild Wars 2? That's a great game.
Yeah, like when these
they things, actually just had an update.
That's insane to me. It's like, that's crazy to me. But also, like, I almost feel like on those sides. Like, the games that were revolutionary at the time, I'm like, I think it's cool that they're still finding ways to push themselves and keep up. And I was wondering if World of Warcraft is like a game that might not exist in 5 years, or if a game that could be the top dog of MMOs again. Yeah. And
I think,
I don't know, because it's going to come up. It's going to be, everyone's going to be like, oh, they now own StarCraft. They now own.
Yeah.
And World of Warcraft's going to be on the list. And it's always going to be the one where I'm like, people still play that?
Yeah, I think, well, if you consider that people actually do still play StarCraft as well, another one of the oldest games of its time.
Oh, I thought StarCraft 2 was still huge, but I'm also
oh, yeah,
pretty it is. Uninformed.
Yeah, yeah. But if you consider that people still play these games, Microsoft really has no reason to, like, shut those down.
Yeah.
They have every reason in the world to continue to build them up, though. So, like, they've already invested $70 billion just to buy the company, right? So how much are they giving these developers and these workers to make something better than what it currently is, right? There's... I don't quite know all the gripes that people have had with World of Warcraft, aside from the fact that it is tied to Blizzard in the first place. But I do know that those gripes are there, and that the team doesn't seem to really give a damn about it.
Yeah.
And so I guess it's up to Microsoft now, once the... deal passes, which should happen, we're expecting, by July of next year.
Oh, so it'll take that long to start seeing...
Oh, yeah.
Effect. Okay.
We probably won't see anything change, really, until 2023, and until Kotick steps down, because he's apparently supposed to do that.
I was about to bring that up and ask, because
yes.
Kotick, I think, his smartest move is to step down before then, because they'll get rid of him.
Oh, yeah. So, as we kind of transition, it seems, to the workers and devs part of this conversation,
yes.
It does seem that Kotick is going to step down. It doesn't look like he's going to step down before, simply because it seems like, per his insurance contracty mumbo jumbo, he will get his nearly $300 million severance if he stays on and then is transitioned out as part of a merger or a takeover or whatever.
And he can probably just hang out. Like, he has...
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, what does he need to do except...
He'll answer emails for the next year and then...
Or not.
Just, yeah. I mean, yeah. He'll just hang out till they tell him he's good to go.
All right. It's June 30th. Get out.
Man, that...
Yeah. And there's actually... some employees here who are like, you know, again, it's kind of bittersweet, right? They're happy-ish that Bobby Kotick will leave, but are like, well, what does that mean for us, right? You know, technically, they're still on strike even now, even though the news came out that Microsoft is buying them out. There's a lot of people who are still on strike who are still not... being compliant in their work, and who have formed this union, the ABK Workers Alliance, and that union will likely go away under Microsoft.
That'll not tolerate unions. That'll be the first big test, I think, is a year from now, will these people just have kind of quietly over time disappeared, like not killed. That sounded so violent the way I whispered it. I do think you're right. I don't think Microsoft's gonna come in and be like, we hear you, we love your union, let's fix it. They're gonna come in and be like, what is this? Like,
yes. I don't think we've seen any real news about the ABK alliance, but you know, Microsoft has, to its credit, right, a pretty decent work culture from what most people have said. Very little in the way of what we've seen with Activision Blizzard. You know, people are paid well, I guess, apparently. I wouldn't know. but, like, you know, those things are in place. So, much like the argument that Amazon has for why they don't really want unions on their premises, the things that the unions usually fight for, quote-unquote, are already there. Which is a weak argument, obviously, but, like, you know, unless you're willing to kind of fight for it, it is, unfortunately, what it is. I wish, if any ABK Workers Alliance people are listening, please come on the show and let us know about
what
the plans are.
And also just, just more perspective. I mean, I've been at two different companies in my career that have been through mergers, and I can speak pretty heavily to one in particular, but both mostly were like the biggest thing is we got like an email when it happened. And then like, that was the only real thing that happened. Like, my question is like the people that are working every day on some of these games are just in the office, like the accountants working for Activision or whatever. I just wonder if like they'll see this news and be like, huh, cool. The boss, 8 bosses above me is different and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then this is just so huge that I hope over time they can trickle it down and have some kind of genuine effect on places without the people being replaced, if that makes sense. Right. But
no, yeah, absolutely.
Right. I also have no idea how something on that scale would work. So it's just wishful hoping and thinking. And like you said, people that know about this should hopefully come on and inform us.
Yes, absolutely. I'm also just hopeful that there's only one person in this case. Well, maybe 3 people. Because again, there were these 2 or 3 Trump era and Bush era people who were appointed pretty high level positions. Did nothing, by the way. And I hope they all kind of, kick rocks, take your severance, and go home.
I feel better about those. I feel better about those people being gone than I do someone like me or you.
Yeah.
Making $60,000 a year to do a job there, seeing any real change in their day to day.
And also a lot of the people who have allegations against them of not only the original harassment, but then the ensuing harassment of people who were speaking out against the company and going on strike.
Like, yes. Yeah. You don't.
No sympathy.
You don't buy this company a year after the worst press year they've ever had. Unless you're like, okay, we're gonna burn all of that to the ground, because that's your first big like press win, is everyone being like, look at this, they came in and cleaned it out. If they don't, they're like, they're fighting a losing battle from day one, at least with the press. I don't know if they care about that, but Kodak definitely did. You have that note that Kodak considered shutting down. I wanted to touch on that.
Yes, Bobby Kotick considered buying game sites like Kotaku and PC Gamer because he wasn't looking too good.
And yeah, last week we talked a lot about my comedy site Robot Butt, but what people don't know is I spent a good solid year writing like listicle and general like content farm content for places like Screen Rant and the clickbaity game news site The Gamer. And I just want to say I'm offended that they didn't want to buy us.
Do you think The Gamer could have rehabilitated Blizzard's image?
I think if Bobby had sent me one email, I could have thrown together a listicle that would have been like top 10 things Bobby Kotick that we love. Number 1 will surprise you. And it just would have been the fluffiest fluff piece. I'd have walked away with a free copy of Overwatch and we'd have all walked away.
Yeah. And 200 loot boxes to go along.
Yep, they could have promised me a level 80 elf monk in World of Warcraft, and I could have thrown together 5 reasons we love Activision Blizzard.
Number 1, Bobby Kotick. Yeah, listen to his name. It just rolls off the tongue.
Need I say more? Oh, I should. Oh.
LOL. Uh-oh. You got it. Yeah. So, Bobby definitely tried to change up some narratives there, or at least he wanted to.
Very embarrassing. Very embarrassing to have that come out.
Especially, to have that come out. But on a similar note, we now know that sometime in November, Phil Spencer approached Bobby and Activision Blizzard and was like, so, do you want us to buy this company for you? Not soon after all of the allegations came out, Phil Spencer saw a chance to strike and he took it. So, again, it's that kind of business thing, right? You're trying to either rehabilitate your image or get rid of your image. And in this case, it's the latter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we can celebrate people being gone. They're all going to be very wealthy off the deal. That's how these deals work. But, yep. Yeah, it's... I don't know. It's depressing if you look at this deal in any way other than, like, maybe games will be better. Like, that's the only way to keep us on the bottom sane about it, but... I don't love much of massive business deals, because, But, but I do kind of like talking last week and having Phil Spencer openly, like, make... like just openly kind of roast Activision Blizzard about last year, and less than 7 days later he's like, you know what, actually,
yeah,
the timing he gets credit for.
He's very I think he's very genuine in his love for video games. Mm-hmm. But he's also like, I make money. I'm here to do money things. I'm going to do money things.
No, yeah. And a boardroom of 10 people in suits showed him two numbers, and one was bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's so funny.
They showed him two pictures, and one was a big bag with a money sign on it. And he said, if I do this, can I finally censor the people on Call of Duty?
Can I finally have my network ban?
Yeah, and they were like, I mean, the only way you're going to get to stop racists on the internet, Phil, is if you own all the games. And he was like, let's do it.
I'm going to buy Sony next.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Japanese players have a lot to say about this as well. We tend to look at this as a pretty... American-centric thing, but Japanese players also have the same ideas you do. They just share them on message boards, not on Twitter. A lot of them are saying, give us back Diablo! What the hell is Sony doing? Sony is finished! Blizzard Games coming to Game Pass! Like, a lot of the things that we've been saying already. Yeah. Including trashing on the PlayStation, which is like... bizarre to me, quite honestly. But one of my favorite quotes comes from a player who said, where did competition, the fundamental principle of capitalism, go? Don't monopolies make things worse? And that's where I want to kind of transition to the industry. Mm-hmm. What is in store for the industry?
I think that it is bad, probably. And I'm just going to keep saying it's tough because, and then saying two points that don't equal, you know, like, like, it's tough because this is the worst thing that's ever happened, but also I want to play a fun game. Like I celebrate the fact that we have PlayStation, Xbox crossplay. That seemed impossible 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And part of me is like, it's so cool that I can play Dead by Daylight with my friends on Sony. Wow, the world's great. And it's like, yeah, but you don't want that to be because the same people own all of it, so they can just like create fake competition. You don't want fake competition. That is such like a stressful, like, you could reach a point where, I mean, Disney does this. Disney openly will have two movies and they will choose how they open them kind of against each other. Because they want to create illusions, they want to capitalize their own money and push people to their own things.
Yeah,
and it's bad. It's very bad, and it's stopping anybody small from having a chance. And I think that video games are probably, I don't know the money side, but I know that, you know, indie games, in my opinion, have a much stronger presence than I think like indie film does to an extent. And you see it all the time. You see an indie game hit it big, and the next day, like, that company is bought, or the game is distributed by a bigger company.
Yeah.
And you just don't want there to be no room left outside of that.
It's, it certainly makes it harder, especially for, as you said, indie gamers, to kind of, not make a stand necessarily, but to market themselves, right? Because now they have to go up against not only the indie studio that Microsoft owns, but Microsoft itself. And on top of that, there's this weird idea that the console wars are predicated only on who owns the most or the best studios. When if you look at Sony's structure, right, their idea is less about owning the studio and more about making these kind of like exclusivity deals. So they have their own studios that make, you know, their exclusive games, Naughty Dog being one of them. And, you know, they'll have the Uncharted series on PlayStation only, or something like God of War on PlayStation only, stuff like that. But then they have these other games that are on these timed exclusive deals. Usually with, like, Square Enix. We saw that with Tomb Raider.
Final Fantasy VII.
Yes. These timed exclusives that only stay on their console, usually for about a year. And that's enough time for most people to decide if they want to bite the bullet and get it for the PlayStation, decide if they want a PlayStation at all, and for them to kind of solidify that this is a PlayStation game, that this is a game that is played on the PlayStation. Even if it is available for PC at some point, it is like solidified in the mind as a PlayStation game. And I think that's where Sony's business genius comes into play. They know how to play the game short term, but for many times, like enough times in a year that it makes money, basically.
Yeah.
And I think people are ignoring that, right? Yes, they have less studios and less exclusives, maybe, but they have this ability to bring people into the fold, if not for a year, then forever at some point. They build these really crafty little relationships, and I think that's more important than being able to, or at least equally as important than being able to just drop $70 billion on a company.
I think, yes, I agree, especially from purely from, because I think the idea of the console wars is kind of not a thing. Like it was, it was such a real thing that's kind of a nostalgic thing at this point. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, but you're in that way, PlayStation to me still wins it out almost every time. I feel like they have dominated the exclusive game battle since like the 360 versus the PS3. They've been, and since we've broken into like the new like HD generation of systems, their exclusives have always been better. And there's always kind of been this thing of like, no, you go to Microsoft for the hardware, but you go to PlayStation for the games.
Yeah.
And I don't even know that first point, I think that's kind of a made up point too.
But, yeah.
I do think you're right. I think there's something to be said about the fact that like Microsoft can buy Activision and put things on Game Pass day one, and PlayStation can still have the game of the year for the next 6 years in a row.
Oh yeah. Yep. Because it's a PlayStation game. It's not like a...
Yeah, they'll still make a Little Big Planet game that'll cost them $1 million to make, and it'll make $10 million, but it'll be the most fun game.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know. Yeah, that's what's... But those games are more fun and more interesting, and they just don't even... They're a drop in the ocean of what Call of Duty makes, and for financially, I guess.
I think at this point, Sega needs to come out of hardware-making retirement.
Yeah, I think it's time that Sonic the Hedgehog comes back and puts this whole thing to rest.
Yeah. Sonic the Hedgehog, Crash Bandicoot, Spyro, and the would-be mascot of Microsoft, whose name I can't remember. I think it was Blinx.
The Time Sweeper?
The Time Sweeper, yes. Blinx the Time Sweeper, who was supposed to be the mascot, but came out with two games, and then Microsoft was like, never mind. Who cares?
Yeah.
They all come out and battle out.
Paul works for Blizzard, and he said he was sick, but he actually just can't comment on this whole thing because he got the email this morning that he's going to be a Time Sweeper.
Oh, Paul the Time Sweeper.
Yeah, we're all feeling really bad for him. Sounds like a tough job.
Well, I hope I'm invited along for the ride. Don't leave me in this space-time continuum. I will come vacuum the time. That's nothing. So, we're just about out of time here. We're going to wrap it up. And as we do, of course, we always ask that you, the guest, give our listeners a recommendation. Which game should they be playing or be on the lookout for?
Oh my goodness, this is so tough after doing this just 1 week ago with Streets of Rogue, which is the best game of all time. Everyone knows it. Oh, man.
Streets of Rogue.
Yeah, I do love Streets of Rogue. You know what?
For the second time in a row.
No, I won't do it twice in a row. I've played more than one video game. That's what most people know about me, is that I've played two video games. Wow. Yeah, let me go ahead. I'm taking way too long. You can cut some of this thinking. I just want to make it a good one.
You can do it.
I know. What do I play that other people might not play? See, my issue is I play Rocket League and Dead by Daylight and all the free arena games that have 8 billion players and don't need my free advertising. Oh, you know what? I got a great one. It's not a great one, I lied. But, you know, last week I plugged Streets of Rogue, and a big reason is because it's a local co-op game, and I play a lot of local co-op games with my partner, and that's, I love it, and Streets of Rogue's a perfect one, so obviously I'm just using this as a soft way to re-wreck that. But I did play It Takes Two, and It Takes Two is very fun, very good game, pretty short, pretty easy to get through, and I do recommend it. And I think I went in a little like, I don't want to like this because everybody likes this. And the story to me is frustrating and a little it simplifies some pretty real things that I think is a little frustrating. But the gameplay is so crisp. The game is very smart. It does a lot of really fun little worlds. And it does do the thing it advertises, which is like every few levels it completely changes the game mechanics. So yeah, It Takes Two is pretty good. It's very fun. Play it with a friend. Make a friend and play it with a friend.
Make a friend, play it with a friend. Wonderful. I am trying to take your point in that I don't want to advertise for a free game that people already play. And mine is Destiny 2, which I did last week. So I'm just going to say go browse itch.io.
I love that.
I think, you know, especially given the perspective that we just spoke about, it is now is a great time to go see if there is either a free game or a cheap game on itch.io. A nice indie game that you can get your hands on.
I love that suggestion. I'd like to yes and it, if that's okay.
Yes,
and. itch.io rules, and I will push you even further to play something and then post a little comment on the page or tell the person you liked it because they see it. I played a game off itch.io recently. And in the game, I got stuck, and I posted it like the world chat, and a guy responded and was like, do this. And I was like, thank you. And then I looked, and it was the guy that made the game.
Yeah.
I'm going to make this so easy for you. If you're like, I don't even know what itch.io is, and I don't know where to go. There's a game on there called A Matter of Murder. Ooh. That's really smart, really cool, really low budget, and it's like $1, and it's a great way to support, I think, a cool, smart indie game. It is a procedurally generated murder mystery game.
Oh.
So it plays like Clue, it gives you 4 rooms, and it randomly lays out the mansion, randomly gives you some suspects, and then you basically play Ace Attorney. You talk to each person, you look around the rooms, and you... it makes notes, and then you have your notes in front of you, and you take a wild shot at solving the murder. If you're me, you guess and hope. If you're smarter than me, you solve the murder.
I was going to say, a wild shot.
And I think it's an important, cool game, because I've played similar, and like Ace Attorney, you know, is like the prime of that. It literally randomizes it every time, and I've played at least 10 of them, which is not that many, but it genuinely has been, the dialogue has been random every time, and it's not like crazy. It doesn't come off like a bot wrote it. It's just, they've just really done a good job procedurally generating it, and I'm like, man, I love that games are heading that way, and I think it's a cool excuse for one. So
Very good.
Check that out.
Very good. We'll link A Matter of Murder in the show notes. Go check it out. And finally, to wrap up this episode, please let us know where we can find you on the internet and if you have anything else to plug.
Yes, you can, to plug it and to find me. I'm on last week's episode of this show. I'm on Twitter at Walt Braley. And yeah, I have a great, fun comedy website called robotbutt.com. And if you think, man, this guy has great takes and I'd love to see lists of top tens he did for a while, you can actually go to screenrant.com or thegamer.com and type in Walt Braley. And I do have lists, a couple lists and a couple weird feature pieces on both. Yeah, I've written some stuff about movies and it's good.
It's good. Well done.
Says the writer.
We can't all be good at writing, Walt.
Some of us just say we are.
All right. As always, you can find me at Comedy Jace Gaming on Twitter, and you can find the Weekly Cooldown as well at WK Cooldown on Twitter. Be sure to visit the Weekly Cooldown Facebook page. Visit WKCooldown.com for more news and other episodes. Be sure to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and let me tell you why. Allow me to tell you why. I've told you this at least for the last 100 episodes, right? It helps the show, okay? When you review the show, doesn't matter if you're in America or South America, the UK, it doesn't matter if you're in, I don't know, Armenia. I was number 72 in Armenia. Don't know anyone out there, because when you listen, it posts it on Apple and they're like, listen to this one. It's really good. So you have to go on there. You have to review. You have to tell your friends to review, because then I get more listeners and then I get money and then the show sounds better according to the universe. So go do that. You can also leave a review on Podchaser. Podchaser is a new-ish kind of program that also takes reviews. And they promote it when there's a lot of reviews. So you should go do it. Go do that. Help the show grow. Be sure to check out the links in the description, including our Humble Bundle for this week. And support your favorite charities and support this show. Our logo and art is done by Corgian of Doghouse Esports. Follow him at Doghouse Corgian, DoghouseCorgian. That's Doghouse Corgian on Twitter. Our intro music is done by Riki. You can find Riki on Twitter as well at dog_noise. That is DOG_NOISE. Riki on Twitter, dog noise. That's all for the Weekly Cooldown. I'm Kami Jace.
And I'm Walt. And
you are. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.